Let's do some writing today on Scribble.
Welcome to Scribble, 30 minutes of conversation, comments, and reviews on reading and writing, editing, publishing, and selling books. I'm Roald Tweet.
And I'm Don Wooten. Today we're going to do a little exercise not on reading, but on writing. That's the menu today on Scribble. Okay, Professor. It's your turn.
Well, writing. Let me begin with a couple of examples.
All right. I'm with you.
One of the things we want to talk about is not only our own writing, but good writing. Right? What constitutes good writing?
Now, wait a minute. You're separating our writing from good writing? I mean, really?
No. I mean, ours may be good, too.
Oh, okay.
I've amassed a couple of examples over the years. Let me begin with two descriptions of a sunset. Both of them are from freshman themes. They are real freshman themes that I'm familiar with. And I want to ask you, which is the better description of a sunset? A. Far in the west at day's end, old soul sinks his flaming head upon the pillow of the horizon. B. Outside my dorm window this evening, the sunset looks like a child has colored outside the lines.
Well, clearly B, but then
why? No. Yeah. Why clearly B?
Clearly B, because it's a little more imaginative.
It isn't.
It's not.
Old soul. Look at the imagination that took.
Oh, yeah, but that is so overstuffed. It's like a big pillow.
So A is a pompous.
Yes, yes, that's right. That's the way I used to write, and I've tried hard not to write since.
But A shows off that he or she knows something about Greek myths.
That's true. But coloring outside the lines is a great, great image.
It's so simple.
That's right. Well, simplicity is best.
Do you want to know who wrote those?
Okay, who wrote those?
B was a young woman in my class in 1971, and it was, I can't even remember what the assignment was, but I remember getting that and just being blown away.
Yeah.
And it was an automatic A.
Uh-huh.
B was written at St. Olaf College in 1951 as the opening of theme number 5 by a student named Roald Tweet.
Well, I've made a mistake, clearly.
No. And I thought, I can remember writing that and saying, boy, is this going to blow Dr. Rotsock's socks off. This is going to be great. I'm going to get an A on this. I got it back and it had a C on it. And it should have had a D if he'd had any guts.
No, that's wrong. You were right and he was wrong.
It's a bad theme. Old soul sinks his flaming head upon the pillow.
Yeah, I don't like that word at all.
The word that I am most ashamed of there is upon the horizon.
What was I thinking?
And I was pretentious, and I was showing off. Had I really seen a sunset? Not at all. Do I believe that the young woman who wrote Colored Outside the Lines actually saw what she described? Yes, I believe it.
Yeah. So do I. I think that's, I like that, Colored Outside the Lines.
I've never forgotten that, and it changed the way I see sunsets.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the first one, my pompous piece, I constantly have to watch myself because that, that finger goes up. I was teaching one day in Old Main in the basement, and I was teaching an 8 o'clock class or 7:50, I guess. So that meant that at 7:50, there were students crossing campus on their way to Longfellow School. And sometimes they would stand in two or three in a window, and there were four windows there, always looking at me. And one day, I was lecturing away, and I looked up, and every student had his finger up, you know, yes, thus I say. And I immediately got deflated, and I can't remember what happened the rest of the class. We got to watch pomposity and that kind of stupid exaggeration.
Well, on the other hand, you know, when I first started writing columns, I have a copy of every column I've ever written. I go back and look at it, and I think, hey, you're trying too hard. You're just trying
too hard.
Yeah. And you've got to just simplify. But then I get down to the bare bones, and I take my writings to Dr. Tweet, and I says, is this as flat as I think it is? And Dr. Tweet says, yes, it is. You need to puff it up a little bit.
I never said that to you.
Yes, you
did. I never said puff it up.
No,
never,
you didn't say
ever,
puff
ever.
It up. That's my interpretation of your critique.
One of the teachers we've had in the English department that I remember, you know, the average freshman English text when I was teaching at the end had about 300 marks you could make for errors in writing, spelling, you know, punctuation, mm-hmm. grammar, stuff like that, transition, and so forth. Father Bonn was a Jesuit priest who had retired. I think he was with us from about 75 to 78. He'd retired from the priesthood, and he came to teach English at Augustana for 3 years before he retired completely. Really an interesting guy with a kind of wisdom that it takes a Jesuit to amass. I was chairman of the English department then, and one day, a young woman came into me crying and saying, I want to transfer from Father Bond's class. He's totally unfair. He doesn't understand me at all. I hate him. And I said, well, what's wrong? And she said, well, I got a D on this theme. And I said, well, what's the theme supposed to be? And she said, it was write about something you would care about. I said, well, what did you write about? She said, I wrote about whether we should admit Red China to the United Nations. And I said, well, he's not that kind of guy. He's such a nice guy. There must be something wrong. Why don't you go and talk to him about this? You know, I mean, it wasn't a badly written theme. And she said, I just can't. Instead, she sat down and wrote a letter and told him what she really thought of him.
Mm-hmm.
The next day, she was back beaming, and on the letter she'd written him was an A. He said, I told you to write about something that meant something to you. But what I remember of Father Bonn is he had boiled all the rules of writing down into two sentences, which I have never forgotten. I learned more from other people than I ever learned on my own. These are the two sentences that make for good writing. Number one, see what's there, which is harder than it appears.
Yep, it is.
And number two, tell the truth.
See what is there and tell the truth. And that is the thing that I've noticed so much when you talk about the difference between men and women. Women see things better. They see in more detail. That's a generic statement, and it's not universally true. But I have found, talking to women, they see things so much better than I do, in such greater detail.
Partly, I think, that's because they have to.
That I don't know.
In a world where men have dominated, right?
Yeah.
They're the ones that have to pay attention to where his feet are going in this dance, right? They follow.
I guess that's true. But
as a result, they learn a very good lesson to pay attention.
I could leave this room and you'd ask me to describe it, and you would think by now I could, but I look around here and think, well, I remember that. If I were to get Mandy Heisel in here and have her work for a while,
right,
she could tell me everything
right
in this room. And that's a big difference. And I think that's a talent for seeing things that that I lack to a great extent. I don't want you didn't tell me about puffing it up. You said I could add more, a little more detail, a little more background. Let me read to you something. This is from a column I wrote a long time ago, and I decided to use it as a touchstone, a starting place for writing. Somebody once raised a pile of money to give to the Guild if I would write my memoirs. I took his money, but I never...
You still plan to do that, though, don't
well,
you?
Well, I don't know, but this opening sentence, I thought, is an arresting one. God never spoke to me.
Right.
That's a good opening sentence. I can't explain exactly how it came to be fixed in my mind, but I was convinced that sometime in the spring of 1936, God would have something to tell me. I think the conviction must have developed during preparation for my first Holy Communion at the end of first grade. Sister Pauline spent a lot of time getting us ready for the big event. Catechism drills were part of the daily curriculum. We were paraded over to St. Thomas Church to rehearse for our first confession. She answered all our questions about how you received the host and how you managed to swallow it. Was chewing allowed? No. Somewhere along the way, she said, or certainly implied, that on that momentous occasion, God would speak to us, not in a general way to the whole congregation, but quietly, individually, perhaps a whisper in the ear.
That's not, good writing.
That's good writing, and...
that's very good writing.
Well, I thought, you know, if you wanted to expand for our first communion, I thought, boy, I could put in there, for our first confession, I could put in there something about, and thus began the flowering of my Catholic guilt, and explaining how, kneeling in the church and waiting my turn, I thought, what have I done wrong? I can't think. And I pretty much had to make up stuff, make up faults for that. And since then, that developed to a point where even now a close friend will tell me, you're way too hard on yourself. And I think maybe that should go in there. That continues. But as it stands now, you're right. It's direct. It's simple. It goes forward. And I don't know why you didn't like this.
Plus, it's not the way, you know, that first sentence is so unexpected.
Yeah.
Right? Because what you expect is somebody to begin by saying, God spoke to me. And God did not speak to me.
No, he didn't. Never said a word.
It's like E. Cummings begins a series of lectures at Harvard University with a line, my mother kept her sense of humor up to the very beginning. And for you know, your first thought is, what? And then you realize, wow.
Yeah.
Right? Instead of the old cliche, up to the very end, suddenly he's turning the tables.
Yeah, and that gives him an opening to say more.
And that's right. And good writing involves, I think, that kind of surprise that first of all is surprising and then seems perfectly natural.
Uh-huh. Well, and that's, you know, as I've gone through this, I forget how many, I think I've written about, 25 pages. I go back and forth in time a lot, and I'm not sure that's a good thing to do. But I just wrote as things occurred to me.
It's a rare book today that doesn't go back and forth in time.
Mm-hmm,
and I don't, I can't say I'm a real fan of all of that either. But
no, and
in
then,
your case, I think that's fine.
I'm allowed to go back and forth in time?
Sure.
But it's, and there's also the thing when you start to write about something personal, I am a private person and I don't want to reveal too much. My younger sister told my older sister, be careful what you say to him, it'll wind up in a column. So I do.
Right.
I do say a lot of personal things, but I never go deep. And I know that most writers, when they write, it becomes almost confessional. They tell things about themselves that they wouldn't ordinarily speak to anybody about. I'm not going to do that.
Right.
not at all. And does that make it invalid?
No, I mean, the big age of confessional writing is, you know, back in the 60s and late 50s, 60s, 70s. And I think that's not so much in anymore.
Well, if one of our listeners wants to write, what should they write about? Should it be confessional? Should it be personal? Should it be observations about what they see? Why should they write at all?
I think, first of all, as you well know, writing is a way of discovering.
True.
Writing can be preaching. I mean, you can have a position, and then you get on your high horse and raise your finger and preach. But the very best writing is the writing in which, who was it said, how do I know what I believe until I've written something, right?
I never know what I'm thinking until I hear myself talking about
right.
it.
Right. And that really is true. You know, when I started teaching, in the old creative writing in the old-fashioned way, the way my mother taught writing back in English class in Mountain Lake, Minnesota. You'll learn to write, right? And you'll learn to write by this is a paragraph, this is a topic sentence, this is a thesis, you know, these are examples, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And you end up with a five-paragraph essay with an introduction, a main body, and a conclusion, et cetera, et cetera. And then in the mid-70s, suddenly there was a revolution in the whole idea of teaching writing. And a scholar by the name of Donald Murray came out with a book that was called Write to Learn. Not Learn to Write, Write to Learn. And that's the first time we get suggested that the way to write is to sit down and write. And without thinking about it, just let it happen. Free write. You know, free write for 10 minutes, or just make lists. Or if you get stuck, just say, this is stupid, this is stupid, this is stupid. And you will eventually find yourself going on, and something will pop in there most often that is really good. So I think the way to write is, first of all, to sit and write without, we are the worst judges of our own selves and of our own writing, right?
Yeah.
And I think the first thing a person has to do is get the judge out of the way. I happen to believe that every single human being is creative. And they may not be Shakespeare, right? They may not be Dryden. They may not be Melville. But everybody can be a creative writer. Everybody can live creatively. We can all do that more than we can. I mean, you know, what is creativity? Jacob Bronowski said it's sensing a hidden likeness. You suddenly, here's one of his examples. A child at the age of 3 months can see the red ball that his mom holds in one hand and then puts behind her back and then takes it out with the other hand. But to the child at 3 months, those are two different balls.
Mm-hmm.
But there must come a moment in that child's growth, where all of a sudden, one day, instantly, in a moment, that child says, it's the same ball. Or even the ball stationary and the ball moving. Apparently, a three-month-old sees those as two different objects. Wow.
Yeah.
And so it must be really great to be a child and constantly start putting the world together and seeing these relationships. That's no different from what the scientist does or what Copernicus did when suddenly he said, what if the sun was stationary and the earth moved? And suddenly it all comes clear. Wow, right?
Yeah, and you should never lose your sense of creativity or wonder.
Well, everybody is creative. I mean, we could not live if we were not creative. So I really do not like people saying, oh, I'm not very creative. I just could never do that. I'm not creative. I like Emerson's phrase, the people fancy they hate poetry, yet they are all poets and mystics. On the brink of the waters of life, they are miserably dying of thirst. Every human being is creative. Every human being could write a poem. I've tried to, and I suppose I could, but everybody can write. So if you want to be a writer, and people should want to be writers, the way to do it is to sit down and, you know, I can recall agonizingly when I was doing research papers and so forth, or doing essays or short stories back in college, I would literally sit at a typewriter for minutes and then hours, literally hours, trying to think of that first sentence and not being able to get it. And once I learned to free write, that once I learned to write to learn, not learn to write, suddenly you discover in all that scribbling, it may take 15 minutes, but all of a sudden there will come a phrase, an image, and you're home free.
You know, it's true. That first sentence is so critical. I had a friend, Don McDonald, who was editor of the Davenport Catholic Messenger way back when it was the most important Catholic newspaper in the country, and he made it that way. He wrote a syndicated column, which was printed in Catholic publications all over the country. And I asked him how he did it, and he said, I just go into my office every Wednesday at 2 o'clock and close the door for 2 hours, and I'll come out with a column. And that must have made some kind of imprint on me, because when I write my column, at 10 o'clock Wednesday night, I sit down and start to write. And usually within a couple hours, I'll have something.
So how do you start?
That's the problem. Through the week, I keep thinking of things I could write about. Momentous things, meaningless things, funny things, all kinds of stuff. I sit down at the computer and write a sentence. And whatever that sentence is, we'll do it. And I just take off from that sentence.
So you do that without thinking?
Do it without thinking. Sometimes that first sentence doesn't want to pop up. And I have started out a column and done three paragraphs and thought, no, this is not worth pursuing. Erase it and start over. But once you get the hook, once you get something to build on, then you just write the column. In these momentous times, I think I should be writing serious columns. But sometimes it doesn't work out that way.
Right.
Nothing serious occurs to me. I might start thinking of something from my childhood or something I've seen, and who knows where the column will go.
Most of my Rock Island lines I wrote by taking a walk. You know, the subjects are plentiful. There are all kinds of subjects. You can look them up in every history of Rock Island and every old newspaper. But getting a way in and a way out, getting an angle. And I discovered that I could not sit at the computer and think of an angle. So what I would usually do is I would go down and, you know, do a little free writing about the subject that I was going to write about, the lock and dam system, let's say. And then I would take a walk of about 3 miles through the Longfellow neighborhood, the Keystone neighborhood, come back through Lincoln Park. And by the time I got back to WVIK and down in the basement to my computer, suddenly that inn was there.
Mm-hmm.
But without ever thinking about it. I have to get myself out of the way and let it happen.
I talked before about Murray Hurt. I sympathize with him for writing a daily column. He says, no, you have the harder thing. You write once a week. That means you have to pick a topic. I just write whatever occurs to me, and if nothing occurs, I get in my car and drive around till I see something that sparks an idea, and I write my column. And it is true. You know, I am driven by deadlines, because when I get to 10 o'clock Wednesday night, I'm crowding a deadline.
Yeah, I could not do.
And panic does it for me.
Right.
Yeah, I'm deadline sensitive. I really am. And that will motivate me, because if I didn't have those, I would not do anything. It's so easy to fritter away the time.
I could not, you know, I've written things, but I could not be a writer, because you've got to pretend that it's a real job and sit there 3 hours at a regular time, or 4 hours, or 8 hours, or however long writers sit. My mindset says, well, today's Thursday. The week's almost shot already. Monday, I'm going to start writing. Right? And then Monday, I will discover that I had the wrong pencil, or, you know, something was wrong with the computer. And pretty soon it's Wednesday, and I say, well, this week's almost shot. And if I had the willpower, I could probably have been a writer. I mean, I could probably make a living being a writer, but I am not the kind of temperament that would ever be able to do that. So I'm happy to use writing as my little hobby on the side.
Yeah, it's tough. I think it's tough to settle down to any one thing. I've found it hard all my life. The world is so full of so many things. And why would you want to spend all your time just
doing
one?
I spent a summer pasting labels on 5-gallon paint cans for Minnesota Paints. And I adjusted to it. I mean, I spent my 8 hours there, and it gave me time to think and, you know, think up lines and stuff. But a regular job like that, you just do it, right?
Yeah.
Or you put left-hand doors on Ford cars or whatever. But writing, somehow I'm still sort of scared of it. And somehow I still sort of think, at day's end, old soul sinks his flaming head, you know, and I tweet, stop it.
Well, I'm frightened of writing too. I can talk forever. As I say, the trick is getting me to shut up. But writing, no. If I did not have the assignment and had not developed a conscience about it, I would not write.
Right.
And that's too bad, because I think when I get going, it works pretty well. But it's hard to make yourself sit down and write.
It's impossible for me. I mean, I don't do it unless I sort of have to do it.
Well,
and so writing for me is the worst thing and the best thing I do. When it's not going well, when I'm sitting there trying to think, what can I do, you know? And then all of a sudden, everything starts coming together. And I discover something. I see some relationship. I make a leap, as Bronowski says, a leap of imagination. And then, wow, it's good.
But you would advise our listeners to just write, huh?
Start writing. Even before writing, read. You know, I forget, I was talking to reading a poet the other day who teaches a lot of creative writing classes. And she said, she's amazed, this was in graduate school at a MFA program, the number of students who don't bother to read anything. She
yeah.
said, how they want to be writers.
Yeah.
What's going on?
Well, read and then write. That's our
read
advice.
Read and write.
Okay. That's it for now. I'm Don Witt with Roll Tweet. We'll be back for interviews with people who do write next week on Scribble.